According to putting a price tag on a government bailout, which actually is days old now, September 19th, but these numbers, I think, are still accurate. The government is considering an $800 billion fund to purchase so-called failed assets. It is also considering a separate $400 billion pool at the FDIC to insure investors in money market funds. As we know, it has already pledged $29 billion to help J.P. Morgan acquire Bear Stearns. It agreed to buy as much as $200 billion of stock in Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae. The Federal Reserve offered an $85 billion bridge loan to AIG Insurance. The Federal Reserve joined with other nations to pump $180 billion into global money markets. And the Treasury Department promised $50 billion to insure the holdings of money market mutual funds for a year. Got that? As I think it was Louis B. Mayer, one of those guys, said, you know, a billion here, a billion there, pretty soon you're talking about real money. In his new book, The Wrecking Crew, today's guest, Thomas Frank, writes, and I'm going to read this paragraph, quote, "We can now say of that philosophy, which regards good government as a laughable impossibility, which elevates bullies and gangsters and CEOs above other humans, which tells us to get wise and stop expecting anything good from Washington, we can now say with finality that it has had its chance. Whenever there was a choice to be made between markets and free people, between money and the common good, the conservatives chose money, and it's time to make them answer for it." I plan to talk with Thomas Frank about how the notions in his new book apply to, first, the Wall Street crisis and the administration's actions and proposed solutions, and second, the current presidential and congressional campaigns. Thomas Frank, founding editor of The Baffler and a contributing editor at Harper's, is the Wall Street Journal's newest weekly columnist, and that's an odd fit, I must say. He's the author of What's the Matter with Kansas, The Conquest of Cool, One Market Under God, and as I said, his newest, The Wrecking Crew. Welcome, Thomas Frank.
Well, it's good to be back here.
Well, I will just preface with a little bit of the conversation we were having just before we went on the air, which is that, you know, things are moving so quickly that we are bipolar, in our reaction to what is a bipolar set of events. But before we start, I'd like listeners to get to know a bit about the people behind the ideas and the work that we talk about. So we'll have plenty of time to talk about the ideas. But your first book was about advertising. Your last book was about voters and culture. And in this book, you actually take on the Republicans and the methods of their madness over the last 30 years. What's the evolution for you personally of what you're focusing on?
How did I become? Yeah, it is curious, isn't it? Because I started out, I wrote a PhD dissertation about the advertising industry in the 1960s.
Exactly.
It was an interesting subject because it was about how Madison Avenue, you know, the advertising industry, went from being so square in the 50s to being so hip and cool in the 60s, which, of course, they remain to this day,
yeah,
as you know.
Yeah.
I mean,
And I have to remind, when I tell people about that book, I have to remind them of the organization man and the man in the gray flannel suit because that image has so long been forgotten.
Yeah. But our whole commercial culture today is so much cooler than you or I could ever hope to be. And what I said in that book was that coolness has become a kind of orthodoxy of the consumer society. And I mean, I love coming out here to Los Angeles just to see this theory in action. Every time I go, it's such a shock when you come from Washington or from Chicago and you see, I don't even want to go into it, but coolness is a civic philosophy out here.
Yeah, know? Well, to think that 2 days ago the Emmys had as their hosts all the hosts of the reality shows. I mean, this is like, there's no pretense there.
Yeah, I know. Well, so what happened was I got very interested in, I mean, I started out studying culture and coolness and hipness and all that thing, and I was a punk rocker and blah, 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 and I rode my skateboard, and I was so gnarly, and I drove my dad's car. And then I got interested in business culture, and I came to an important realization when I was writing The Conquest of Cool, which is if you don't understand capitalism, if you don't understand business, then you don't understand America. And, you know, at the time, everybody wanted to be in cultural studies and talk about how everyone was dissenting by buying some different brand at the supermarket. You remember that? You remember those days?
Yeah.
And it dawned on me that they were just completely missing the boat, that if you don't understand the way business works and the way it dominates our politics and the way it dominates every other aspect of life, you don't understand this country. And while I was coming to this, you know, realization, which I mean, I guess for everybody else in the world is kind of a no-brainer, you know, but it took me a really long time to figure that out. While I was coming to that, you know, amazing epiphany, the new economy bubble was going, you know, the dot-com froth. And I was watching that unfold and reading, among other things, the Wall Street Journal's op-ed page, but also, you know, Fortune magazine. You remember what Fortune magazine got up to, like 500 pages an issue back then?
It was as big as Vogue.
Yeah, it was cooler than Vogue even. And I would have CNBC on all the time, and I was writing a book about the thinking of the new economy, this kind of feverish, overheated idea that we had turned some economic corner and that the old rules no longer applied and we didn't need the regulatory state anymore, all of these things, and that's what One Market Under God was about, and that sort of led naturally into studying conservatism, because economic, you know, talk, whether it's on CNBC or whether it's in the pages of the Wall Street Journal or whether it's in Fortune magazine or whether it's coming from, you know, a book like what were they called, the Beardstown Ladies, you know, personal investment handbook, this is political. It doesn't seem like it's political on the surface. Maybe it's just some dude picking stocks, but it is political. It has a political agenda. And that's when I became interested in – well, I've always been interested in conservatism. And as you know, I'm drawn to irony. I mean, everything I'm talking about here is an ironic situation filled with, you know, unintended consequences and everything turned upside down. And so What's the Matter with Kansas was about the biggest irony in all of this, the phenomenon of working class conservatism. And this has really been, you know, one of the sort of I don't want to say it's an unexamined irony, because other people have written – there's been great books written about this subject, but nobody's ever really got to the bottom of it. And I decided I would try that. And then, okay. And now here I am. I moved to Washington, D.C. What a strange thing. I moved to Washington, D.C. and – when I get there, this wave of scandals and corruption breaks, you know, the Abramoff thing.
Abramoff delay, all of that.
Yeah. And at the same time, you're watching federal agencies be taken over by the industries they're supposed to regulate. You're watching, you know, lobbyists running the city, running the federal government. And I said, there's got to be a theory that can explain all of this. How do you explain all of these things happening at the same time? And that's what The Wrecking Crew is. So there you – now you know why I wrote – each of my books.
In succession. What you say in the book is basically, let me find one. Well, the quote I read at the top said a lot of it. And then you say that the fantastic misgovernment of the kind we have seen is not an accident, nor is it the work of a few bad individuals or bad apples. It is the consequence of triumph by a particular philosophy of government, by a movement that understands the liberal state as a perversion and considers the market the nexus of human society.
Yeah, so that's funny, isn't it? And that describes their theorizing and the way they talk. But the funny thing is, look, all of those things have had grave consequences that we've seen in the last few days. I mean, constant deregulating of first the Reagan years and then the Bush years, the rolling back of oversight. I mean, we're being dragged down by, among other things, by a market in credit default swaps that we know nothing about. It's unregulated. It's unscrutinized. Nobody understands it. I mean, I've read numerous stories about it. I barely understand it.
And let me ask one question, because I've heard the numbers. I've read the numbers bandied about. There is enormously greater value. I this is something I've heard and read in all of these securities instruments than there is in the GDP of the world.
No, I don't think that's right. I know there's more value in them than there is in the entire everything traded on the New York Stock Exchange.
Okay.
But that's – I mean, I read that in – hell, I read it in the newspaper, so it must be true.
Right. Well, you know, and there's a thing that Kevin Phillips pointed out in Bad Money, that where financial instruments and the whole financial sector used to be about 10% of the economy. It's now 20%.
That's what we do. We don't make anything in this country anymore. We make financial innovations. We figure out – crazy new ways to package debt and to, you know, beggar thy neighbor. That's what we do. That's what Americans are good at now, and we're being dragged down by it. Because look, the bottom rule about the thing that you have to understand about markets is, I mean, the conservative philosophy, which they teach in every economics department in America, is that markets are fundamentally self-regulating. That, you know, markets get out of hand, you know, investors will understand that and will flee to safety, blah blah blah, and ultimately the market will always right and correct itself and always come back to what's that word? That equilibrium.
And all those aggregate self-interest. The self-interest of each investor will steer things right.
Yeah, but of course, the opposite is the case. What happens is markets boom and bust. Markets markets panic. Well, first markets get crazy exuberant like in the 1990s. And people are convinced of these absolutely asinine ideas, you know, that we've turned some kind of historical corner, that the old financial rules no longer apply, that man has suddenly become a different creature. And then they swing, you know, entirely the other way. You know, the end is here. The end is upon us. And, you know, it's the game is over. We're in 1929. And, hell, we may be. I mean, things look pretty bad. That's the way markets behave. And also there's, you know, unless you patrol conflicts of interest and the possibility of corporate boards looting their own companies, that's what they're going to do every time. They're going to rip you off. They're going to steal you blind unless there is all sorts of scrutiny, and unless you can understand what's going on in the markets. I mean, and of course, do you understand collateralized debt obligations?
No. I mean, I think
it is too loud.
I actually was doing shows and talking about the subprime crisis and how it was going to come back to bite us in like 2005.
Yeah.
Which.
Well, everybody thought that.
But it's way beyond that.
Yeah.
If all it was subprime gimmicky housing loans, that would be simpler, and the whole thing would be a scale different, or three or four scales different. But it is all these instruments that were created by financial guys,
and then given AAA
to sell
ratings,
to financial guys,
given AAA ratings for Lord knows what reason. And then once they've got that, then they're out there in the stream, and they're being traded. And they're all over the place, and everybody's got them. Entire companies dependent. Look, at the end of the day, you know, we're all going to take an incredible shellacking for this, for what Wall Street has done, and for the fact that we just let them self-regulate, and the fact that we just let them do as they please. Who's going to get bailed out? Way they are. Okay, they're going to do all right. Those companies are going to survive. The government is going to buy their stupid toxic paper off of them at Lord knows what price. I don't even know how they're going to set a price, since the things aren't traded. They're not tradable right now.
I mean, that was Krugman's thing in Monday's paper, which was that, wait a minute, you know, if you pay them what they're asking, that's the only way this might actually work. But if you pay them what they're worth, which
we don't know what it is.
Well, either we don't know, or it's a hell of a lot less than they're asking, or someone else would be buying them.
But if you do that, we're going down a dead end here. It's just, if you do that, then the companies are going to go out of business, and that's what you're trying to avoid in the first place. And look, I admire energetic interventionist government. Okay, I think that there is. I'm always telling people there is a place for deficits and deficit spending. I believe in it. I'm a Keynesian. I believe in Franklin Roosevelt. He's my hero. There is a place for it. It has to be done responsibly. I like energetic government. Up until about 3 days ago, I thought Paulson was Secretary Paulson was something of a hero, that he was, you know, he was actually doing something. He was no Herbert Hoover actually out there,
swinging.
He and Bernanke were really trying hard, but now I don't know. But the first thing that we got to sort out is the responsibility for this, and this comes right back to my book, The Wrecking Crew, because this is what it's about. These people have deliberately sabotaged the sort of oversight function of government in numerous different ways. And we're not just talking about financial deregulation.
That's right. We're not talking about just
financial deregulation. Yeah, I mean, that's just one thing. And by the way, some of the biggest financial deregulators are on John McCain's campaign, and the dude is actually out there now presenting himself as an enemy of Wall Street. It's extraordinary. We're living through the most topsy-turvy times.
Yeah.
I mean, hey, maybe John McCain will come in as president and he will have the spirit of Theodore Roosevelt in him, and maybe he'll do right. I'm not counting on it.
No.
You know?
And I think the American public is in an enormously tricky place in which they have the biggest crisis economically and two failing wars on their hands, and they have a choice between someone from the party that's given them all that and someone that, even by most standards, is less experienced than most candidates.
That doesn't really matter, because Obama knows who to hire.
No.
He's got
smart
people.
No, I'm saying for the public.
Oh, yeah.
For the public. They perceive it, you know.
He knows as much about this subject as McCain does, I guarantee.
Oh, much,
you.
Much more. No, I got no problem with him and whoever he's going to bring in.
Yeah.
One of the things, and just to talk about a political piece of this, is, well, let me before I do that, let me just say, do get the book, even though we're not focusing on it like crazy, because
we're about to start.
It tells how the conservatives, especially the real leaders, the Grover Norquist and those kind of folks, have painstakingly and methodically emasculated government so that all it can do is authorize wars and vote bailouts.
That's right.
Kind of.
Well, it certainly can't. It doesn't supervise markets in a proper way, and that's deliberate. I mean,
it doesn't do the FDA watching your food or your pharmaceuticals. It doesn't do OSHA watching your labor practices in meatpacking plants.
Oh, heavens no.
It doesn't. Do,
I mean, the agencies have been so dumbed down. I mean, lobotomized. And you look at FEMA during Hurricane Katrina. This is the same thing in financial markets. These people are totally unprepared. They have no idea what they're doing. They've hollowed out the federal agencies. They've deliberately chased away the best and the brightest. By the way, this is a theme in conservative thought.
That's right.
To keep the best and the brightest out of government, and then to make sure that the regulatory agencies don't actually regulate. But they've been doing that ever since Reagan. You know, war on the EPA, war on OSHA, war on the Department of Labor,
war on unions.
Yeah, and the other thing is agencies that are essentially in the pocket of business.
Right.
There's a term for this. They call it regulatory capture, which makes it sound really, really, really boring. But in fact, it is a fascinating thing. I can rattle off for you three or four different federal agencies where people have said, either on paper or allegedly had supervisors tell them, that they don't answer to the public. They answer to industry. Their client.
They actually say
their
that.
Their client is industry. Department of Labor had a document I got on their website that said the customer is business. The Department of Labor.
Wow.
They're supposed to be looking out for you at work, looking out for the worker, you know, and the customer, the exact word, it's in the book, it's in the wrecking crew.
And then the other thing is that they staff.
The FDA has said this.
Right.
The Federal Aviation Administration, this was a scandal just a few weeks ago. I mean, and these scandals, by the way, keep erupting, you know, and now we've already forgotten about last week's scandal because of this week's, you know, which was the Department of the Interior, where you had the crazy business with this minerals management service that was supposed to be getting extracting royalties from the oil companies. Turns out they're actually, you know, partying with these guys, sleeping with these guys. I mean, they're actually getting it on with industry.
I mean, it was the most – I mean, what's amazing is how, because of what's happening, that was like a blip for 5 minutes.
It's already forgotten.
At a time when, other than, you know, Viva Sarah Palin, drill baby drill – was the biggest campaign issue the Republicans have, and here you say, well, what happens if we do drill on our lands?
Yeah,
well,
you don't actually get the money.
The government is busy sleeping with the oil company, so you'll never see any of it. And that should have been, and the scandal. I mean, like if you remember some of the old scandals, it would be like one mink coat.
Oh yeah,
one overnight stay. This was everything.
The conservatives love to refer to government as being inherently corrupt, and especially to liberal government as being inherently corrupt. That it steals your money through taxation, hands it out to people that don't deserve it. You know, it regulates your business. It does all these things that are inherently corrupt in the eyes of conservatives. And I thought about that. You know, what was the most, and then their example of, you know, how corrupt the Democratic Congress. Remember when the Gingrich people came in 94, they were supposed to be replacing what they would always say was a very corrupt Democratic Congress. And Boehner even repeated this at the Republican convention that, you know, the Democrats were so corrupt. You know what they were doing? They were writing bad checks, you know, like personal checks. Do you remember that?
Well, also.
And they had this business with postage stamps. Someone had, like, swiped some postage stamps.
And he was selling books at the back of his speeches.
That's right.
Remember the Senate minority?
And I was thinking that at the high watermark of liberalism, like the Johnson era, the biggest political scandal in those days, now leaving aside the Vietnam War, the biggest political scandal in those days was the Bobby Baker affair.
Right.
Remember this? You know what Bobby Baker had been doing that he got in so much? He was on the cover of Life magazine. It was supposed to be so awful. He was one of Lyndon Johnson's cronies. He had somehow, through whatever means, had gotten the contract to have vending machines on military bases. That's it. That's Democrat. That's the liberals, man. Yeah. You know? And now you've got basically government by contractor in Washington, D.C., where they've outsourced and privatized, I mean, everything, every imaginable kind of work.
And but as you say, including the agencies themselves, because the heads of the agencies, one after another, were former lobbyists for the industry
right.
they're now regulating.
And then they go through the revolve. We have this thing in D.C.
right.
called the revolving door. It sort of rotates above the city and it's a giant golden thing. And they come in from wherever to, let's say, the Department of Homeland Security. They work there for a couple of years, and then they go off to the Homeland Security industry, which is this very rapidly growing, extraordinarily lucrative industry based, by the way, in Washington, D.C., one of the reasons that Washington, D.C. is the richest city in America now. They go into that industry, and there they lobby their former colleagues for contracts. They get contracts out of – I mean, the Department of Homeland Security is just an enormous, you know, piñata filled with gold doubloons to be smacked at by lobbyists.
Well,
you
bring up the Homeland Security. Let's talk about this politically for a moment.
I'm sorry. This is all so depressing. Do you understand what we're talking about here? I mean,
yeah.
This is – we are talking about the ruination of government. We are talking about people that used – that for the last 8 or 28 years, depending on how you look at it, have used the government for their personal profit and have run it into the ground. This – I mean, have run it completely and utterly into the ground to the point where now they've – you know, and now they have to bail out – you know, they're buddies. They let these guys go hog wild. You know, they stole with both hands. And now we have to go bail them out.
Well, let's talk about this for a second, because you brought up Homeland Security. What the thing that Homeland Security always reminds me of is that just prior to, I guess it was the 2002 election, came the big Homeland Security bill. And Democrats said, we will vote for this, even though we were for it before when you were against it, but we will vote for it. But you got to unionize the workers at the very least. And they used the fact that Democrats said they had to unionize them as a campaign tool. And Max Cleland was,
yeah,
you know,
there were a bunch of people lost.
The triple amputee from the war and former head of the VA was tossed out, voted out because he wasn't patriotic enough. Now, what I see happening here, and then there was the war authorization bill was done just before an election. And now I see this bailout is being proffered just before an election.
Well, they have
and
to do
if
it now.
I know they do. I don't say they were so competent as to schedule this now.
Yeah.
I don't say that.
Oh,
but
no,
this
is a Democrat in the White House.
But what I say is they are going to use the thing of we can't fiddle around to say that Democrats, if they ask for some of this bailout, some conditions on this bailout that actually either change circumstances and regulation or provides, let's just say simply, that the Democrats say we've got to own these things if we bail them out.
Yeah.
We've got to own these banks or own a percentage.
At least there has to be, there has to be supervision. I mean, there always has to be accountability and supervision.
We have to get something for all this money so that if it turns around, we profit from that,
that's not going to happen, I'm here to tell you. I mean, I'm very sorry to say. I mean, they might add such a provision, but there's no upside to this, you understand? I mean, as far as I can tell.
You mean you don't think that ownership or supervision can make any difference?
Oh, no. They have to have supervision so that it's done properly. I mean, there has to be accountability so that it's done correctly. It's not just done.
But you're saying that these assets are never going to be worth anything.
Yeah, well, they're trying to reinflate a bubble, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
It's the dumbest idea in the world.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe I'll be proven wrong. I mean, let's hope I am. But it just strikes me as utterly foolhardy. You know, these are the people that have been – look, I don't believe in free market theory, but these people bought when they should have sold. Let them go. They need to get spanked.
But
– instead, they get the airbag. You know,
well, but wait. I mean, do you follow that to its logical conclusion? Would you be –
No, I don't want the economy to fall apart. Of course. No, you have to inject liquidity at a time like this. There's no question about it that you've got to look, at the end of the day, whether you like it or not, it's a capitalist country, and they have to prop it up, and sometimes it's ugly, and sometimes it's unseemly.
What frustrates me
is that these guys get bailout after bailout. And the people that I care about, ordinary, average, working Americans get nothing. I mean, they get the bankruptcy bill. They get the screws tightened on them, you know. That's what they get. They get, you know, they it's not even – it's de facto illegal to form a labor union in this country. You know, their wages haven't gone up for 8 years. You know, the economy's been growing. Productivity goes up. They get nothing. Unemployment is at 6% and rising. I mean, who knows where it's going to be at the next time around. Gasoline is almost unaffordable.
7.7 in California.
Beer is cheaper than gasoline.
Yeah.
Beer is cheaper than milk.
Well, and gasoline's still cheaper than water, but that's another crazy thing.
Oh, it just makes me so I'm frustrated,
yeah,
sir.
Let me ask you one sort of big question.
By the way, you should tell your listeners that this is Thomas Frank here. He just wrote a book called The Wrecking Crew. We are sifting through the wreckage.
That's right.
Here on KPFK.
We are. And we've got about one more minute. What should listeners do besides
get mad?
Get everything in cash?
Oh, no, that's not necessarily. I would say Krugerrands, my friend. That's a joke, by the way, folks. Don't do that.
Yeah. But if I give you 1 minute, what should listeners do?
Other than buy the book?
Yeah.
The Wrecking Crew?
I heard, what's his name on Dave? You know, the guy on America, that's basically what he said they should do is buy your book.
Well, things are so much farther gone than that now. You have to demand, we have to demand accountability from government. I used to suggest things like set up we have to set up a blue ribbon commission to look into the entire history of outsourcing, and it just seems so. I mean, that's when the book first came out.
Yeah.
You know, just a few months
just
ago,
a few months
that
ago,
seemed
that was
such a great idea and so shocking and so radical, and now it's gone so much further. I mean, and they're pushing it down our throats so fast that I don't know how to respond.
Okay, we're going to leave it at that because reality is going to change very quickly. Again, the book is The Wrecking Crew, How Conservatives Rule. The website to learn more about this and his other books and his op-eds and the whole thing is T.C. Frank, one word, tcfrank.com. Thank you, Thomas Frank. Keep up the good work.
It's my pleasure.